Welcome to another episode of the Dawn of Shades on this 12th of February, 2008. It's been a meteorologically resting day here in New Orleans with everything from warnings of high winds and heavy rain to tornado watches. So keep your fingers crossed that the weather that is currently in a lull just stays there and doesn't affect our power or internet. Yesterday, and when I was speaking with our guest for tonight, she was telling me that they were anticipating a snowstorm there. And across my fingers, it didn't affect the Alaskan telephone system. Sounds just about as wonderful as the system I had when I lived in Arizona. I remember complaining about their terrible telephone service, and I was told then that it was scheduled for an upgrade in 2026. That was a few years ago. So, as you sit there listening to this program via high-speed internet cable or DSL, remember, not everyone has access to that lovely luxury at any price. I've lived places where in the continental United States where telephones, either landline or cell phones, just weren't available. And I've lived where we didn't have electricity either, barring what was produced on site. I still can remember the sheer joy I felt when a propane refrigerator was located for me, because for the first time in months, I had the option of keeping things cold. I could actually sit down after working a day in temperatures well over 100 degrees and drink ice-cold tea. And as silly as that sounds, before the arrival of that refrigerator, it was a choice of tepid water until every week or two when I got to go into town, drink gallons of iced tea, and marvel at swamp coolers and air conditioners. Now, living a life so simply in a remote location made me think about some things. And maybe it shifted some of my perceptions of the world. Those that know me really well know that I don't watch television, and I really don't get the fascination with fictional programs that catch so many people's attention and their time, really. I don't understand a lot of the differences to programs on television or movies. I do find the concept of animal communication quite fascinating, though, as my life has always been intertwined with animals, mostly horses, dogs, and cats. Animals just seem to make more sense to me, although there have been a few mysteries along the way. I can remember vividly a buckskin gelding that used to actually seem to hate humans. Normal horses are prone to crowding you and may bite you or kick you when you're carrying feed to them in a group pen. It's a really risky thing walking into that pen carrying half a bale of hay in your arms as a dozen hungry horses crowd around you and squabble over whose hay is whose. Now, once you put it in the feed trough and you've moved out of that crowded little situation where there are hooves flying every which way, they're busy eating their dinner and they're not interested in you. But this particular horse wasn't really all that normal. He'd already heard a number of the cowboys that had ridden him and was notorious for a trick of snapping his tie down, throwing his head in the cowboy's face, and while the cowboy was occupied with usually with a bleeding face and head, the horse would toss him into a nice big patch of prickly pear cactus. His hatred of people extended into the corral as well, and he would attack me without any provocation. And several times, I had a fantastic view of the underside of a very large horse and his hooves as I rolled up like a sow bug to tumble underneath the fence rail to get away. I've also encountered a few dogs along the way that just didn't seem to have a connection with humans. They lived as pets, but really didn't feel anything for humans, not even a form of respect. They had no qualms about biting anybody by that they perceived as being an obstacle to getting what they wanted. And I never could connect with them at all, and nor could anybody else. Now, obviously, dogs who choose that path in life are really at high risk for being killed for their sins against man. And most of our domestic animals have a very strong connection with humans because of their long association, is my guess. It wasn't until fairly recently, after beginning to study the animal communicators more closely, that I realized that all animals have a bond with humans, and that all humans have the ability to communicate with animals, at least to some degree. Our guest tonight is Dawn Brunke, an author and animal communicator herself. In reading her books, I began to realize that there were a number of references to an awakening, to people becoming more aware. This has been a common theme with many of the guests on the Dawn of Shades, this awakening and remembering concept. We are, as a whole, becoming more accepting of the idea of talking to the animals You know, I'm not talking about clucking, barking, mooing, and neighing itself, but understanding on a different level. Made me think about my own daughter, who has always insisted she could talk to animals, and she was also very good at mimicking the sounds they make. Even today, she will occasionally call me to ask me what's going on, because Red, my dog, has told her she's worried about me. On a more mundane level, Red voices her opinions about the people in my life, about activities, about vehicles I choose to drive, and about the other animals that share our household. Red really doesn't think that cats should cohabitate with us, and that someday I will come to my senses and realize that cats are good for only one thing, fast food. I know which friends that Red enjoys visiting with and which ones she merely tolerates, and the ones that she really wishes were far away. But she's usually far too polite to do that Colgate grin and snarl at anybody. Now, if she does decide that it's necessary, she really does get my attention. My entire family insists that Red is a whole lot more sense about people than I do, and that I would do a whole lot better in the world if I listened to her a little more often. But even as a somewhat aware person, there are times when I seek the advice of others, because they aren't as emotionally tied into the situation as I am. There are times when we want to learn more about communicating with our pets, and it's times like these that we turn to someone like Don Monkey. And so, Don, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. Well, I was thinking maybe I'd start just telling you a little bit about the, how I got into this whole topic. I moved to Alaska about 11 years ago and became the editor of a health and wellness magazine out here. I was given a big box of papers, and one of the, which contained articles and things basically the other last editor didn't know what to do with. One of these articles was written by a woman in Anchorage who talked to animals. And the article was really well written and fascinating to me. My background in college was symbolic anthropology and comparative religions. So I was really interested in how different cultures connect to the divine and talk about that experience, that spiritual experience of connection. So anyway, I eventually talked with this woman, and I found out there are people called animal communicators. You know, who knew? Not me at the time. There were actually people who did this, who talked to animals via telepathy, via a heart-to-heart or mind-to-mind type of connection, and were able to carry on conversations. That was something that was just absolutely fascinating to me. The woman who wrote the article, whose name is Chris Long Ago, actually also turned me on to a writer of the 1940s and 50s by the name of J. Allen Boone. Boone was probably one of the most significant writers for me at this time, because I was, while I basically really believed that this was possible, the more I read and the more I talked with Chris, there's still a big skeptical side of me. And so Boone's story was really interesting to me. If any of your listeners have read Kinship with All Life, it's a wonderful book. And it's basically Boone's experience of his connection with a dog named Strongheart. Strongheart was a kind of the forerunner to Rin Tin Tin and Lassie back in the 1940s, and he lived with a animal trainer, and who Boone was friends with. And long story short, Strongheart came to live with Boone for a time and basically taught J. Allen Boone how to connect with animals, that there was something there, not just by training or by motions, because Strongheart actually had been a war dog in Germany. And obviously living with an animal trainer, as he did, he was, you know, in the movies and knew a lot of cues and how to interact with people. But what Boone experienced with Strongheart was much deeper than that, and it was the ability to actually communicate or connect in a very meaningful and profound way. So once I read that, I was totally hooked, and I began to interview some of these animal communicators from around the country. I ended up talking to about 24 of them, and that's kind of how my first book got written. It is, you know, I had started out writing just some little stories for magazines, but as I talked to them more and more, I had more questions about how did this thing called animal telepathy works? How do we connect with animals? If we can connect with animals, what would they have to say to us? So really my first book, Animal Voices, with the subtitle Telepathic Communication in the Web of Life, was basically about my kind of initiation into what this was about, my interviews with all these different communicators, and through the communicators with about 100 different animal species. So a lot of these communicators were so helpful and willing to talk to horses, dogs, cats, llamas, whales, dolphins. We also explored some what I would call shadow country, which is animals whose connection with human is something, you know, that a lot of people shy away from. For example, animals in research or just in general, animals in captivity. So the book explores a lot of those questions as well, as, you know, what do these animals experience and what would they like humans to know?
I have to interrupt here.
Yes, go ahead.
One of many people's least favorite animals has got to be rats.
Right.
You know, just nobody likes a rat. We use the term a rat to describe all sorts of negative behavior. Now, can an animal communicator talk to them and get them to leave?
Get them to leave?
Yeah, leave a house? Yeah. Well, or a building or whatever?
Actually, I have. Yeah, and there is a story in that book about that, a woman who had trouble with, I believe it was rats or gophers. Anyway, the principle is the same. And actually, J. Allen Boone also writes about this. He had trouble with ants. And the way he worked with it is he basically had a gentleman's agreement with the ants, is that he told them, he first connected with them in a way where he was a, I guess it's like, in a way you're also communicating with yourself. Because you're transforming that relationship of I hate rats, rats are, you know, ugly, blah, 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 to one of respect, where you look at what rats actually do in the wild and what rats actually bring to our world. And so Boone was able to do that with his relationship with the ants and talk about the respect he had for the ants and the ants' ability. And he explained to them it was difficult to have them in the house, you know, going back and forth, and he was able to make this agreement where the ants left. And if left,
you know, I kind of asked that because in, mm-hmm. you know, New Orleans after Katrina, we had all the flooding, and the rats, of course, left the flooded areas and went to areas that were dry.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to live in an area that was dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, everybody that I know that has lived in the areas that weren't flooded has had this battle with the rats. And
mm-hmm.
my dogs happen to hate rats.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're after them, too, you know. And I was like, you know, maybe there's a better way than this mass murder thing we got going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is a transition time, too, when something like that happens with the environment and the rats lose their area, just as, you know, humans are displaced from their area. You know, there's going to be a little transition time there before things settle down again. So that's a slightly different maybe communication that you would do with animals.
Well, I was just, so that suddenly popped into my head. That wasn't
mm-hmm.
even one of the things that I had thought about asking you about. And it was like, you know, what about the rats? You
mm-hmm.
know, they do so much damage to buildings,
mm-hmm.
and they're virtually impossible to barricade out. You know, they can choose to send a block steel, I mean, just about anything I've ever seen,
mm-hmm.
because they are incredible gnawers. And so I was curious.
The incredible gnawers, yeah. And, you know, on the other side of it, there I do know of several individuals who have very wonderful relationships with rats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not even necessarily as pets, but I would say as friends. I really would. There was actually a great story written. I can't remember the author's name. It's also in that book, mention of her. But she was a performance artist in New York. And another performance artist was doing something with rats and actually decapitating the rats on stage. And this woman was horrified and basically saved a rat. And this rat, whom she named, or called, I think it was called Taddy Waddles, lived with her. Rachel Rosenthal, I think, is her name. I'm sorry if I don't have that quite right. But she lived with this rat, and she wrote a wonderful book about her experience with the rat and everything she learned from this rat, and it was really fascinating, very heartfelt.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, a lot of times when you change your perspective, you know, things do look a little bit different.
Well, they do, and I think that's actually one of the really positive things about animal communication, because, you know, one of the first things you need to do in order to kind of open to it is really look at your perspective of your relationship with animals. And for us in the West, that gets turned on its side in general, you know, for most people where they come from. So it's a transformative thing that happens, I think, when we begin to open to animals, and we also begin to open to ourselves in different ways. So yes, we do shift that. We shift our consciousness in a big way.
Yeah, and it's, you know, sometimes it's a difficult leap to shift your consciousness to, I guess, have unbiased communication.
It is, and I think that's one of the second things you kind of get to is where you start looking in animal, we're kind of jumping ahead here, but in animal communication in general, I think one of the things that you soon come up against is your own bias, your own prejudice, your own kind of comfort zone, what you think is acceptable and what you think isn't. And time and again, I've been surprised by things animals have told me or shared with me that I realized, oh, I guess I have a judgment against that, you know, or is that possible? And so I think you continually, you know, as in life, if you're observant with life, you know, we continually come up with life showing us things about ourselves that maybe we're a little closed down on, that maybe we're holding a little bit, that maybe we're judging, you know. So it's a continual learning process.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think probably, you know, I work with dogs as, you know, all day long, every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do for a living, is work with dogs. And, you know, people say, you know, so many things, why don't you get a real job? But I like what I do, and that's why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a case of dogs are very honest, and there's not a lot of complexity there, you know?
Mm.
They don't have bad days, really, you know, unless they're not feeling well. You know,
mm-hmm.
An older dog can have a bad day. But in terms of a bad hair day, they never have one, I don't think. You know?
Bad hair days, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the days, you know, when you get up and you're just grumpy for no reason, they really
uh-huh.
don't seem to go there. You know, they're the same every day. Yeah, you know, and barring a change in what's going on, you know, there isn't a lot going on, you know, a lot of unnecessary complications. They're not worried about what you're wearing, how your makeup is, what your hair is doing. They're not worried about what anybody else thinks. You know, they're worried about the here and now. They're not worried about tomorrow.
Right. Well, I think that's one of the things in general that a lot of animals can show us is letting go of that worry. Because, you know, as humans, we're preoccupied with worry, you know, for the most part, at least the West right now.
Oh, you're more, I know a lot of people that are much more worried about what's going to be on TV tonight than they are what they're doing right now, and that's probably causing a great deal of trouble during their day because,
mm-hmm.
you know, they aren't focused on the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
They're more worried about their retirement than their relationship with friends and their pets now,
mm-hmm.
You know, and so forth and so on, you know, and we do tend to forget that here and now thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a conditioning of society, yeah. We're very, you know, to-do, and, you know, we have these little lists, and we have these goals, and, yeah, I mean, it's very easy to get sucked into that. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I see animals teaching us, is that all of that really isn't important.
You sit with an animal long enough, and you'll definitely get that here and now thing, yeah. Here and now, no worries, you know, sitting in the sunshine, enjoying
yeah,
the sun.
They're
enjoying
never worried about a resume or a credit rating.
No,
you know?
No, yeah, it puts things in perspective, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But going back to the basics,
mm-hmm.
what would be the most important, or the first thing someone who wants to learn more about communicating with animals, wants to develop their ability to do so, what's the first thing that they should do?
I think the first thing is develop really good listening skills, because many of us are very focused on what we're going to say next or what we think might happen or how we imagine this might unfold. And I think I think those of those of us who meditate might have a little step up, or those who are just comfortable being quiet and not always having to talk or have that internal, chatter going on. I think that's a really good space to be in. I do it kind of, multi-leveled. I think definitely establishing a rapport with your animal and being in a really nice space where, either you do some exercise or some play with your animal and you're with them in a good space, in that good, calm, open to conversation, listening space. But I think cultivating that is probably the most important thing.
Okay, that's very useful advice, really, because it is. So many things that so many people are curious about in terms of animal communication. Does animal communication somehow connect with spirituality in general, do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And how does it do so?
I think it does. Well, I think kind of what I mentioned before, because I don't think you can really get very far connecting and communicating with animals unless you're willing to do that with yourself. And I think it is a continual process of kind of deepening your own connection with your inner self, if you want to call it, or your spirit or your soul. You just start opening. I think there's a softening that occurs in people because you do have to face, your own holds, your own blockages. And once you move into that with more of that space of, it's okay, all right, maybe I do have that judgment, that's okay, what would happen if I let it go? And there's an opening, there's a lessening of the worry, there's a lessening of the chatter. There is more heart-to-heart connection, not only with animals, but with oneself, with one's family, with your neighbors, with the lady at the checkout counter at the store. I think it's a gradual process that just opens us and helps us become more connected, really with ourselves, with other humans, with the animals, with the planet, and with a sense of spiritual connectedness, really, with everything. So
that's,
I think it's a gradual thing that we work on, that we open to, let's say, rather than work. We open to it.
That is important to be open to it. If you're not, then obviously nothing is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the different species that you or other people communicate with,
mm-hmm.
How about things like fish and reptiles, things that we really don't, most of us assign as much importance to as, say, a mammal?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting what you said in the beginning. I think we're definitely domesticated animals, cats, dogs, horses. They kind of know our schedules. They kind of have a sense of our world, and they're included in our world. So in some ways, it's easier to, go back and forth with communication because we have so many things in common. When you're connecting with an animal that doesn't have a lot of space or time in connection with a human, you're really asking to open to a different world. I mean, it's a profound communication you're opening to. Let's say, for example, some fish that lives, really deep down in the ocean that really never even sees light. What would that be like? Well, you're going to have to get yourself in a space, number one, where you're willing to go deep down in the ocean, and connect in that way. I'm talking, again, telepathically or with our imagination as a vehicle and opening to that. And I think our understanding of that is as open as we ourselves are willing to be, and to learn from that. I think, my personal feeling is that everything has something to share and something to teach and something to communicate. So where are we in ourselves with our questions and with our willingness to get outside of our own kind of particular worldview how far are we willing to open?
Well, out of all the animals on the earth, I would say that probably fish are the most alien to us in terms of how they live and whatnot, because, they live in the water where we can't live,
mm-hmm.
and they don't walk like we do, they don't crawl,
mm-hmm.
and, communicating with fish would be very similar, I think, to communicating with an alien.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I never thought of it like that before. It just reminds me of something. I did a little workshop for a school. It was a kind of a one-room schoolhouse, and there was children from, I think, as little as like first grade up to about eighth grade. And I talked to them about animal communication and what it was and how we do it, and then they wanted to experience it. So I had they had some guppies there. So I had everybody lay down. And this was a great time, right, because you get to lay down in school. And everybody closed their eyes, and we imagined what it was like to be a guppy. And so we did a little stretching and little movements and stuff and connected in that way. And then I asked the children to ask the guppy, what was it like to live in their world? What was their day like? And we probably spent about 15 minutes on that, which is a long time for a first or second grader. And when we came back, I was really impressed and amazed by the kinds of stories these kids brought back and their connections and what it was like to be a guppy and what guppies had to say to humans and the things they learned. So, again, I think it has to do with just, you know, how you frame it. For them, it wasn't a scary thing. It wasn't even an alien thing so much. It was just, oh, it's a guppy, you know. So I think they went into it in a very safe way. And you know, kids are great with working with imagination and really happy to go there, to go to any place like that. So, you know, to them it wasn't. In fact, I remember one little girl explaining to me what it felt like to breathe through gills. And she was, you know, showing me what that felt like and how it was different than breathing. And it was really amazing. And I think those are the kinds of things that we can open to. With animal communication, but also with kind of extending that a little bit and what I would call shape-shifting, putting ourselves into that kind of position and actually feeling a kinship with the animal in that way, what it feels like to be in their body and to sense the world through, you know, the mechanism that they sense the world. And that brings up another interesting thing, not to go too far away, but, you know, how do we as humans interpret things that animals, particular animals, let's say echolocation or something like that, that we don't have the sensing mechanism for, but other animals do? What's it like to experience that? Well, you know, some people would say with animal communication, you actually kind of go there in your mind, or you actually share bodily feelings, and then we translate that back when we come back into our body and we express it in that way. So there is a sharing also, I think, of not only words and thoughts, but of physical presence that we can do with animals. And, you know, in fact, with plants and with all aspects of nature.
I was thinking, you know, in terms of the fish's environment and life and even how they navigate their world.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
We can't go up like they go up.
Right.
We can't go down like they go down.
Right.
You know, barring when we're scuba diving, but that's such a limited version. And I was thinking, you know, that has to be the closest to alien that we have on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you could, in fact, communicate with them, then, you know, perhaps it would give you some insight into communicating, you know, when the time comes with actual, you know, extraterrestrial, alien sort of
mm-hmm.
entity,
mm-hmm.
because it would be, you know, you'd have some practice, perhaps, at mm-hmm. understanding things that were beyond your understanding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think animal communication in general does pave the way for other types of communication, such as that, yeah.
Well, for one thing, you know, it's going to give you some empathy for animals. It's going to, I think it'll... If you've communicated with a dog, it's real hard to abuse a dog.
Oh, yeah.
You know, along those lines, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that communicating with animals would be a contributor to someone electing to become a vegetarian for ethical reasons?
You know, I don't think necessarily so, because many animals eat other animals.
Right.
And, you know, I remember that was actually one of the things I wanted to discuss in Animal Voices in the first book, because, you know, many animals are connected to their prey, that whole predator-prey relationship. And I remember a cat explaining it to me as a dance. It's a dance relationship, you know, and that whole chase is something that is honored in that relationship, and the taking of another animal for food, and that animal becomes part of you, is really not seen in the same way as I think as many humans see it, especially vegetarians who do it for the sense of not harming others. I think it's just a whole different mentality, and most meat-eating animals would speak about it in that way. I've never heard an animal say, we don't do that.
Well, I absolutely cannot imagine Red announcing to me that she's not going to eat meat because she likes meat.
Yeah.
She wants to chew on bone.
Yeah.
She only agrees to not kill the cats because I said she wasn't supposed to.
Right. Well, it's a different relationship. The cats are sharing the house in a different way, whereas in the wild, it would, you know, the rules would be different.
Or even outdoors, the rules are different.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah. Once everybody's out the door, well, the rules all change again, you know?
That's funny.
She's only going to live for so long.
Yeah.
She keeps hoping they'll go out there, but she figures that if she goes ahead and does one of them in, even if they do go out, that does teach them not to go outside after midnight.
Right. But I bet you, when you communicate with the cat and ask her about the relationship with the dog, you know, it'll be in terms of, I shouldn't speak for cats, but, you know, that's like the worst thing in the world to do, to speak for cats, but cats have a relationship with their prey, with birds or small, little crawly things, and I'm willing to bet that that cat understands the relationship with the dog and how that whole predator-prey thing works.
Well, It very well. My cats, I have to admit, regard the aggravation of Red as a sport. You know, it is. It's a sport. They know they can aggravate her. They'll wait till she's asleep, walk up, swat her ears, and then run like the dickens. or pounce her tail and then run like the dickens. They know the parameters that
right.
they're going to aggravate her. And,
right.
And they know that when she growls, she means it. Don't approach her now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do have, you know, that sort of relationship going on.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to pretend that they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And for several years now, she's kept the older cat out of the bedroom. But the kitten, he just sort of thumbs his nose at her, and he says, if I'm going to go sleep on the bed, I'm going to go sleep on the bed.
Uh-huh.
And she's just sort of resigned herself to the fact that she's stuck. She just won't lay on the bed if he's there.
Mm-hmm.
She'll throw herself on the floor with this very loud, dramatic sigh, so that I know she's not happy.
We have to appreciate cat drama, don't we?
Well, this is a dog's drama that, you know, she throws herself on the floor. The cat just does it, you know? Cat just, you know, he decides he wants to sleep on the bed. He just gets up on the bed and curls up, goes to sleep,
uh-huh.
and starts purring.
Uh-huh.
She hears feels the purring on the bed, and so she just gets up and throws herself on the floor. And I have to laugh because it's the epitome of Sarah Bernhardt, you know. So much drama.
Right, there you
throwing
go.
Throwing yourself on the floor and sighing, you know, so that I know she's not happy about the cat being in there, but you know, I'm not making it leave. So, yeah. She's gotten tired of chasing him, I guess.
Uh-huh.
That's the only thing I can conclude, because she never did let the other cat in there. Absolutely refused. The cat was not going in the bedroom. And this one she's letting in there. Not without protest, but she's letting him in there. And it's interesting, you know, they have so much personality. You know, and it's interesting to watch how they interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like people that don't like dogs, especially large dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Red is a large dog. She loves to aggravate. Yeah, she'll do things like someone who doesn't like dogs, she'll go sit beside them.
She'll hit the side of them?
She'll sit right beside them.
Oh, sit beside them, yeah.
Yeah, sit beside them. Often put her head on their lap or even take her nose and jab them. You know, it's like she knows.
Uh-huh.
Even though they haven't said anything, she knows they don't like her. And she's gonna aggravate them. And it's funny to watch her do that, you know, because you finally have to tell her, you know, that, okay, enough's enough here, you know.
Uh-huh.
But she does. She has a great fondness for aggravating people who don't like her. Or pretend, the ones she really aggravates are the ones who pretend to like her and don't.
Mm-hmm.
down.
Well, and that's a good point. You know, I think that's another thing animals teach us is that usually in connecting with an animal, you see very clear energy, and they're very, you know, clear about who they are and what they like and what they're there for. And you don't see the same kind of, you know, human thing of saying one thing and doing another, or acting one way and being another way, you know, that confusion of energy that a lot of us humans like to do. I don't think you generally see that with animals.
Am sure that they have a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I definitely think there's many animals that have a great sense of humor. Just fantastic.
You know, they just...
Yeah.
Too often I'll watch them and you know that dog is actually laughing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know without a shadow of doubt that dog is just laughing so hard because
mm-hmm.
it's just so funny to them. Yeah, because they do that. And how about animals that most people would actually call evil? Is there such a thing?
You know, maybe that's a personal question for people. I don't subscribe to that belief. You know, I don't think things are evil. I think a lot of times it's easier to project evil out there on things we don't understand, especially shadow material, things we're, you know, we're not comfortable with. It's easy to give it a label of evil or bad or whatever. But no, my personal take on it is no, it's not.
I was just curious because, you know, some people, there's superstitions about animals, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they vary between cultures. You know, one
right.
culture regards the raven as a trickster or a teacher. Another a culture may regard it as a bringer of bad news or, you know, a destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the same animal,
mm-hmm.
but the perception of it is so different.
Right. Well, I think sometimes, especially with Raven, for example, who does have some of that trickster energy, is that, you know, one culture is seeing one aspect of it and another is seeing another aspect. And so maybe that culture is highlighting that one aspect and just kind of seeing that to the exclusion of everything. But when we talk about, let's say, trickster energy in Raven, we're really talking more about, you know, that animal spirit or that animal, the energy of that animal as a species and kind of what, and maybe this is a good time to talk about that, about animal medicine, what Native Americans would call animal medicine, which is the teaching of a group of animals. They kind of embody this this gift or this teaching to the planet. It's something they bring, just as humans have. We have our own, you know, gifts and teaching to the planet. And I think that's one of the things, you know, after you kind of get beyond literal conversation with animals or very, you know, day-to-day domestic kind of back-and-forth type thing, I think you do begin to start opening up to energetics of animal spirits or animal totems, whatever you want to, power animals, whatever you want to call it, kind of, and those all things have a little bit different definition, but it's that whole notion of, you know, an animal at large bringing this energy to Earth and what that teaching is. And we can also connect that way with animals and learn from them. We're not necessarily learning from an individual animal, or we may be. We may be learning that power of that animal through an individual animal. In other words, you can talk with a cat and have a very kind of personality-type conversation where the cat is giving you, you know, its personal take on things. But you might also connect with cats in a way, and through an individual cat or just through, let's say, a dream or cat spirit, where you're really tapping into that larger presence of cats and the kind of energy that they bring and the teachings they bring. And they also may be very varied, you know. Cats can teach about a number of different things. You know, we could go into that, but in other words, they bring a number of different shades or hues of that gift to the planet that we can tap into and connect with and learn from. Definitely.
And there's a wide variety of animals that symbolize a concept or maybe a facet of human character, perhaps, is a better
mm-hmm.
way to put it. Like coyote is supposed to be another trickster.
Right.
You know, various animals are supposed to be teachers, various animals, you know, symbolize things like strength or wisdom or being, you know, have a certain physical attributes and so forth and so on. And, you know, all this symbology associated with the animals, you know, does that come into a play with animal communication too? I mean, do you actually talk to animal spirits in a sense like that?
Yeah, and let me just kind of backtrack here to my initial introduction, because this kind of plays into it, which is after I wrote that first book, I did get a number of emails from people or talks with people who say, you know, I don't communicate with words and things, and then they go on to tell me about this incredible dream they had with a cat or a whale and this teaching that came through. Another person might say, you know, I don't communicate with animals, but, and then they'll tell you this incredible story about, you know, whenever they're thinking of their neighbor, a turtle will appear or something like that. And so I started realizing that all of those things are connections and communications with animals. And that's really why I wrote my second book, which is Awakening to Animal Voices, which looks at kind of a lot of different ways we connect with animals and how we can connect more with them, not only animal communication, but definitely through the dream world, definitely through unexpected meetings with animals, where an animal will bring you, like you said, kind of a mini teaching or a, you know, something that you need to see about yourself, in that sense of teaching. We can also connect with power animals or spirit animals. Also, I think we learn a lot with animals and their teachings when we go through healing. Either when you're with an animal who's very ill or who's even dying, you know, there's a huge teaching and connection that can come through in the death process. So, we talked about before with shape-shifting, we're actually kind of connecting with an animal and sharing not only thoughts but also a physical presence. So, yeah, I think there's very many ways we can connect with the animal world and learn from animals. And sometimes it's many of them at once. Sometimes we'll be talking with an individual animal, with an individual dog, and all of a sudden you'll kind of get this group voice, and you're wondering, what is that? And it's a group of dogs that are coming through, or a group of dog spirits. I remember one time my mom's dog was really ill, and I was talking with the personality aspect of the dog, and, you know, trying to find out things to make it comfortable. And it said, oh, just a minute, and I'm loosely translating here. And all of a sudden, there were two dogs that came in who were almost like medical teachers, you know? And they were dogs on this kind of different plane, or they had a connection with the canine teaching and healing. And they brought through some information that I couldn't have known about any other way, but they gave very specific information about how to help heal this dog, which had a tremendous benefit, and my mom acted on it, and the dog just felt so much better a couple days later. And it was one of those weird situations where, like, how do you know that information? But I think we definitely do tap in to other levels of knowing, and there's definitely different animal contingents on a spiritual plane or astral plane or etheric plane, however you want to divide that up, that will come through and will help with information. So I do think, yeah, that we do definitely do tap into animals in many different ways in that sense.
Yeah, and another thing I was curious about, my dog Red has a particular affinity for depressed people.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a depressed person in a room, she will, without a doubt, go to that person first.
Uh-huh.
She's very insistent that they pet her and pay attention to her,
mm-hmm.
and she has always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
She just has a thing for depressed people. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, she seems to help them. Petting her seems to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I was reading some research where, you know, petting a dog was, you know, it made your brain release the happy chemicals, and they really would technically help with depression.
Right.
You know, can an animal communicator help an animal find their little niche in the world and then therefore, you know, their person help them too?
That's a really good question. I think that is possible. And I'm remembering now another communicator telling me a story about that, similar to that, where, you know, I think it's like, you know, sometimes just like humans, an animal doesn't really exactly always know its place in connection with humans. You know, probably in the wild it would be a different story, but... I think also with you know, let's say dogs or cats that have kind of a particular problem. I think a lot of times, just on a behavioral level, if you can find them a job to do, that really helps. Like, for example, I have I live with a black lab named Max, who loves to bark. I mean, he just loves to bark. So through a number of negotiations, we now have it where if one of the other dogs has to go out, he will bark and he will let me know. And rather than constantly barking throughout the day, he knows that, you know, if he has to go out, one of the other dogs has to go out, he'll bark. If it's time for breakfast or dinner and I'm a little late, he will bark. So he's you know, we've come to this agreement where he has a job. And that's his job, and everybody honors him for that job, and we don't go crazy having to listen to barks all day long. So, yeah.
You know, I'm kind of curious because, you know, I do work with rescue dogs, and
uh-huh.
a lot of them are kind of lost souls, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's
mm-hmm.
no other way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've had so much turmoil in their lives
mm-hmm.
that they really do need a job. They need to feel important. They need to feel, and sometimes they have, you know, issues, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, we have a German Shepherd who's incredibly timid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's a lovely dog, but she is just so scared of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she can't interact well with people because she's sitting over in the corner like, oh, please let me just go to my nice, safe
mm-hmm.
cage.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a young dog, you know, but if she had a job, you know, if she had a job, she had a place, you know, a function,
right.
where she felt as though she had a reason to be there, she'd
right.
be a happier dog.
Right. I think that's totally true, and I think it's equally true for humans. You know, we all need to be valued for what we do and to find that niche, as you say, in life. And yeah, that's great. That's, you know, you're answering your own question there about finding something for these dogs to give them purpose and give them direction and meaning. And, you know, I think a lot of dogs, too, rescue dogs, you know, there's an issue of safety, of feeling safe. And so if you have a job to do, something to focus your energy on, that's probably going to help a lot, too, with feeling safer in the world.
Yeah, you know, not all rescue dogs have been abused,
uh-huh.
you know, or even necessarily what you would call abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Just for various reasons, they could no longer live with their original family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there they are, and now maybe they didn't fit in well with their original family, and that's
right.
why
right.
they're now, you know, looking
right.
for a new one. And, you know, even the puppy that I've got that I'm fostering right now,
mm-hmm.
She had issues about being housebroken. She could use your dog, Max,
uh-huh.
because she doesn't tell you.
Uh-huh.
She's perfectly happy to go outside and go, but if you don't know that she needs to go...
Right. Right.
She's made a mess, and she's got unhappy people around her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granted, I'm a little more geared to deal with the mess than, and besides that, a 4.5-pound dog versus, you know, 65-pound red, her
yeah.
mess is nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like cleaning up after a mouse. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, that it would be so much easier if, you know, we just understood better.
Right. Right, and I think, you know, let's just go back to that, just for anybody who's listening, who wants to do that, you know, I think it's just as easy as getting in that space of wanting to listen, of wanting to hear, and of opening up that space within yourself and connecting with that animal. You know, that's really where it starts. I mean, we could go through all kinds of little different, you know, lists of how to do this, but really that's your connection, is to be in that place of wanting to help and just telling that dog, you know, I want to help you, and how can we, you know, work this so you feel less, whatever, depressed, sad, et cetera, and opening to that space.
We all receive,
you know, that, let's just go into this a little bit, too, because it is kind of interesting. We all receive answers in a different way. You know, I do remember a lot of people coming to me or sending emails or notes and saying, you know, I don't get words. Well, not everybody does get words. Some people will actually hear, let's put hear in quotes, through little movies in the mind or through little images or through a sudden aha. You know, there's a lot of different ways of getting that conversation going. And if you're a very visual person, you might get a lot of visuals. If you're a very kinesthetic person, You might get actual feelings within your body. You know, I happen to use words a lot, so for me it's easy to get I get that kind of automatic translation in words. So I kind of hear it in my head. I hear it, you know, within me. And animals' thoughts are, I think you'll talk to most communicators and they'll say, you know, animals, that when you're getting kind of that thought formation in your mind, it's very different than your own thoughts. And it's true, because oftentimes I'm very surprised at the language, you know, choices that are used, or the way something is expressed, or even the content of what's expressed. So, you know, there's anyway, that was just kind of a little diversion.
Well, you know, I think about it, and I think about how hard dogs work to understand us.
Mm-hmm.
And they can understand an amazing amount.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them will go to great lengths to communicate back with you. I mean, most of us who spend much time with dogs have seen dogs who, to all intents and purposes, it looks like they're trying to talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're yodeling, they're yeah. trying their best to get
yeah.
to make sounds. Some of them can even go mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's quite definite, you know, and even with my own dog, you know, if she's trying to tell me something to do with food, she will make a chewing motion with her mouth.
Uh-huh.
You know, this dog isn't, you know, she's not stupid.
Uh-huh.
If she can go to these lengths to communicate with us and to, you know, to make me understand when I'm being stupid, you know, can we put the same amount of effort into, you know, trying to understand them?
Mm.
You know, I'm at least as smart as a dog, I hope.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, they do. They try very hard to communicate with us and to understand what we want
mm-hmm.
and to please us.
Mm-hmm.
And so often I think we just tend to be too wrapped up in what's happening, you know, 4 hours from now or tomorrow or next week.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're not in that here and now thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely requires a shift of, you know, of focus and of consciousness and willingness to sit for a while and open to that.
Yeah, we're getting near a break now, folks. Before we go to break, I did want to tell everybody we have a special tonight. We're giving away a set of Angelica Del Mar's Messages from Your Animal Companion Oracle Cards. So, if you want to win a set of these cards, listen up, bring up the website, www.gscott.com, and look for the Calico Cat, and wait for me to announce that it's contest time, which obviously is going to be after the break, so you've got a few minutes to find that cat. Yeah. It'll be something interesting. It's a rare opportunity to see that Calico Cat. I have a picture of her just so that I can show people who come to see me what my cat looks like. Because she just tends to prefer to be elsewhere when anybody extra is around. She's not a real social cat. She prefers to observe. And there's a lot of cats like that. And Dawn, before we do go to break, would you give everybody your website and where to get your books?
Sure. The website is animalvoices.net, and there's a link on there to Amazon. I think, you know, several bookstores carry them. You can email me if you have trouble getting hold of it. But the website also has a lot of excerpts from the books. It has a list of professional animal communicators in different parts of the country. It has pages on what to do when you lose an animal or... There's just a lot of information there. So it's www.animalvoices.net, and that's that.
Well, we still have a couple of minutes before we actually do go to break.
Okay.
But I don't want to get into anything too terribly deep and complex.
Uh-huh.
So let's see. What would be a nice, quick question for you? The audience isn't asking any questions tonight, which I'm surprised about, but that's okay. Well, you can think of this one. Maybe you won't have one to tell right away. But in any human endeavor, at some point, something becomes humorous. What is the funniest thing that you've ever had happen in terms of animal communication?
The funniest thing?
Yeah. It's probably a question different than what you were expecting. But, you know, humor happens all the time.
Well, and I'll tell you one thing. I'm standing right here at my office. There's a bush in front of the window. And I do remember standing here once during spring, and I had there was a bird actually flew into the window and fell down right when I was standing here, and I was so concerned, and I moved over and I looked down, and the bird was kind of coming to, and we started this little conversation. It wasn't even planned or anything. We just sort of went back and forth, and at one point I said, I have to go because my husband was taking me out to dinner. And, you know, I was kind of imaging what that was, going out to dinner. And the bird was absolutely horrified. What? You do not get your own seed? You have somebody else prepare food for you to eat? You know, it was just, and that was one of those things that completely took me by surprise. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, that is a weird thing, you know? We go to some place and have other people prepare food for us that we pay for. And it was funny to me at the time, you know.
A bird might perceive that as kind of gross, you know.
Very strange. And just, you know, it just, like, could not comprehend that at all. Like, that was the weirdest thing that this bird had ever heard about, you know. Talking with a human was strange enough, but to find out that humans actually did that, that was very strange, yeah.
Yeah. Well, folks, on that note, it is time for our break, so stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network. And the Donna Shades will be right back. Yes, Don. Okay. We should be clear. Welcome back to the Donna Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and we are talking tonight with Dawn Brunke, author and animal communicator. Her website is www.animalvoices.net. If you would like to participate in tonight's discussion with a question or comment, you may do so by raising your hand in the virtual auditorium or by calling in on the toll-free number 1-877-786-0562. If you're interested in joining the virtual auditorium, directions for doing so are found at the bottom of the page at www.giascott.com. That's spelled GIASCOTT.com. Okay, Dawn, where were we? We were talking about, humor.
Humor.
Yeah, humor. Humor is a good thing.
It is a good thing.
Yeah.
It is a good thing. And I was saying to you over the break that I think my experience has been connecting with a number of animals who have a very, you know, almost like witty, very, very keen sense of humor. And it's interesting to see the different shades of humor that come through different animals. You know, just like humans, like my dog Max that I mentioned before, he's just a big goofy guy, you know. Everything is kind of big and goofy and moving around. Whereas other animals I found to be animals in my same household, my pal Zach, just a very dry, kind of witty sense of humor that comes through in different ways. So it's a joy to connect in that way. Definitely.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, like sometimes you'll... Red, I would say she has a sly sense of humor. That's the way I'd put it. You know, it's just sort of... Yeah, sly is the only way to put it. You know, she's just...
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way she is about things, you know.
Yeah.
She finds humor very amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time. Ones who throw rocks are not amusing. It's not funny at all. Yeah. And then the cats, you know, I have no idea why Callie has no desire to be seen by anyone. But Smokey's the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to be in everybody's face. And, here's a question. You know, a friend of mine has a kitten, and... his name's Ying Yang. And Ying Yang, you know, just really finds Red absolutely mind-boggling. He wants to play with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's just not into that.
Mm-hmm.
And rather grumpy about it at times, you know. You know, how can you explain to this cat that, you know, it's nothing personal. She hates cats, and then she's old, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, she probably already gets that. You know, it's just, you know how that little kitty or puppy energy is. You know, play with me, play with me. And, you know, it's a continual engagement thing. You know, if you want to communicate, it would be the same thing, opening to that space and connecting with her. You know what, once it just occurs to me, something I'm remembering a long time ago, a woman had a similar situation. She had a lot of cats she lived with, and I think four or five, and the one kitten was just, you know, really wanting all the other cats to play with her. And what this woman did was she had a family meeting, and she actually, you know, basically went in the living room and said, we're going to have this meeting, and sat down and quieted herself. And, of course, none of the cats came right away, but the longer she sat and the more she focused on that, and I'd really like to have a family meeting and discuss this, a number of the cats showed up. And, you know, when we're using telepathy, really space and time don't matter so much. So she was able to, in her mind, you know, connect. She did it visually in her mind, but you could do it any other way, just feeling that connection with the cats in the house, and kind of talked it out. And she did report to me about a day or two later that it just settled down. You know, the kitten still did that a little bit, but things had really settled down. It's like just by the fact of having that open forum, so to speak, and having that conversation with the family of cats and with herself, brought some kind of sense of, okay, you know, it's out in the open, and yeah, I might not be exactly what I want, but things will settle down and we'll work out. So that might be a really good thing to do.
Well, I have to
have a little family
case,
you know.
You know, in my own case with Callie and Smokey.
Mm-hmm.
Smokey, I didn't intend to keep him.
Mm-hmm.
I was up for adoption, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and he was just way more than, I just didn't see myself as a two-cat person, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Callie never liked other cats at all. One day, after Smokey had finally gotten where he had, you know, free roam of the house, I turn around and there they are laying together, and Callie, who hates everybody, is grooming Smokey and playing with him.
They worked it out.
I would say she's a happier cat.
Yeah, there you go.
Because she has him as a buddy, mm-hmm. and they play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though Callie's about 3 years old and way fat, she is a fat cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play and play and play and play, sometimes all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's had enough, she lets him know, leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And she has some secret hiding holes, too, because there's times she disappears, I can't even. So she's got some good sneaky hidey holes around somewhere.
Well, you know, the story brings up a really good point of, you know, sometimes we as humans are pretty quick to project our own ideas about what it should or shouldn't be. And that's another thing animals can teach us, is that sometimes, you know, the way they work things out is the best way for them, you know. And so there is, you know, it's certainly great to have a family-type meeting and talk about these things and bring them out in the open, but also allowing animals their space and their own time to, you know, work things out. And sometimes
uh-huh.
working things out means, you know, I'm still not going to like that other cat, you know. And as long as no one's hurt, or, you know, things might get worked out that way, too. There might not be a deep camaraderie. You know, and that's fine, too, just as in families, you know,
I have a divided household because my little dog's decided that she doesn't want anybody else to live in the house anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, she has to be kept apart from the big dog because she continually wants to attack, and the big dog, she's really tolerant, but she's not that tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was, each time that there was an attack, the injuries to the little dog got a little bit worse.
Mm-hmm.
Until finally I said, okay, you guys are not working this out, and I cannot afford, you know, larger and larger holes put in the little dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just say that they're kept apart now.
Mm-hmm.
She's not allowed to get near anybody else.
Right,
because
right.
She's consistently proven that she's not going to behave.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kept apart. She's laying on the sofa right now, gnawing on a bone and being very good. Because she can't get at anybody else. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, that was a choice I made, you know, that we just would separate and live together but separate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she just, I muzzle her actually to even take her to PetSmart or anything, because if there's another dog, she's not going to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want any more problems with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing she's little.
Yeah.
Good thing she's little. Yeah. So, now, going with some more questions, what would you say is the biggest benefit to animal communication?
I think there's a number of really good benefits. And number one is, not necessarily in order, but one is certainly seeing from a different worldview, opening ourselves up to seeing from that animal's viewpoint and understanding the world in a different way. And connected to that, I think it naturally flows into what I spoke about before, is that we necessarily enlarge our own consciousness. We necessarily enlarge our own sense of connectedness to the earth and to each other and to our deeper self. So I think those things kind of go hand in hand, and I think kind of the larger we get in our outlook, the more inclusive we are, the more open we are to views that are dissimilar from our own, and that I think also I tend to think, I don't know if this is necessarily true for everyone, but for me it is, the more we're able to look at shadow material and things we may not like about ourselves or feel uncomfortable with, and the more we're able to face those, our fears, our worries, our anxieties, and kind of move through them, accept them in different ways. So I think it definitely has a lot of benefits for the planet in general, and also for us as individuals specifically.
That's probably very true. I think sometimes the hardest thing is looking at yourself and being honest about your less than wonderful aspects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We
and I think humans, we do have so many judgments about ourselves, I think. You know, humans in general, we really are, we're kind of really hard on ourselves. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and it's hard to see sometimes how, you know, we're so hard on ourselves. You know, just how we look or how we do this or do that. And it's like, you know, I think we need to be more friendly to ourselves, and we need to appreciate more about ourselves. And like you were saying,
sometimes we're much more judgmental and hard about it on ourselves than we
right.
are to our worst enemy.
I think we are. I think we're very hard on ourselves. Yeah.
And
I think that's one thing.
If we can't forgive ourselves as well as we can forgive an enemy,
right.
Come on, there's something wrong here.
Right. And I do think that is something animals, especially domesticated animals, are really good at, that dogs and cats and horses are really good at instilling that in us, and loving us unconditionally, and that's a huge teaching, how to love unconditionally, not only others, but ourselves. So,
yeah, definitely.
Big one.
Well, and many people will tell you, you cannot learn to love someone else or to be loved by someone else
mm-hmm.
until you're able to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's one of the biggest lessons animals have to teach us, is to just let go.
Yeah.
That it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you know, when you are meeting your creator and getting, you know, your assessment of your life, do you really think he's going to be going, well, you had a good retirement plan and never missed a day at work?
Well, and it's also that shift from doing to being. You know, humans, we do tend to be a little bit obsessed with doing, what we're doing, what we, you know, what degree we have, how we look, how much money we own, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the shift with when we connect and really learn from animals, it's more to being. And to being who we are and enjoying ourselves and expressing our humor and our passion. So I think it's more being-oriented rather than, so doing-oriented. So definitely. Letting go is a good one. Letting go and loving oneself. There we go.
Yeah, that's a big lesson right there in itself, you know.
Yeah.
And, and animals do. They love unconditionally. You know, if you have an animal that loves you,
there will never be a doubt in your mind that they do. I've seen Red sit in a pouring thunderstorm at the gate waiting because it was time for me to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, dog, please go get in something.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just sit there getting drenched. And, you know, it's total devotion. I mean, I invented kibble as far as she's concerned. And, you know, I am it. I mean, she might be the universe, the empress of the universe, but I'm, you know, the ultimate empress in her eyes, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She just thinks I'm wonderful. And, you know, when you look at something that does that, that has that total devotion, that total admiration, that total love unconditionally, you know, you have to look at yourself and go, well, gee, I must be worth something here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly, you know, the dog isn't that stupid. You know, unless I was worthy of that sort of thing. You know, do you really, you don't have to be anything. You can be a homeless person and have that sort of love and devotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter about your score in terms of human achievements.
Right.
It's just what you give back, which is all they want is your love back. That's kind of, you know, when you have to remember that, yeah, that's kind of humbling in a way, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think it speaks to being very open and authentic. And, you know, there's a sense of relationship that goes on, really, in when you communicate and when you connect in that way. And I think the more open and authentic we are, as we said before, you know, with animals, the more open and authentic we become with ourselves, and that starts to shine through in a way where it becomes seamless, and that relationship becomes a bigger, kind of all-encompassing field, and it touches
uh-huh.
everyone. So, yeah.
Okay, well, right now I'm going to announce our contest. The first person that emails me with the location of the cat, the calico cat, on the website. That website is www.giascott.com. You will win a set of messages from your animal companion, the Oracle card deck. So, go look at the website, click on email me, and boom, send me an email, tell me where you found the kitty cat. And that's probably the best view you'll ever get of her, even if you were right here in New Orleans. Because like I said, she's a bashful kitty. And going on, what else would you say would be an important thing that you would want people to know about animal communication?
What's another thing I think would be important?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, why don't we go over a few basic steps for anyone who's listening who wants to do this. You know, we kind of spoke about it generally in terms of opening up and listening. But let's go into that a little more specifically, perhaps, about how to actually set it up. I kind of did a little four-step, you know, cheat sheet in both books, actually, about how to do that. So if you just want to connect with your dog or cat, you know, as we spoke about before, it's nice to get into that space where they're calm and you're calm. So maybe going for a walk first or playing and then finding a quiet room to come into and sit and really begin to, you know, you might want a pet or whatever's comfortable. Some people just like to sit, the dog or cat laying down. Some people like to pet. Some people like to lay down on the floor. It doesn't really matter. Whatever is more comfortable for you and your animal. And then begin to open up in connection. And when I say open up in connection, you know, to me that's a very, if you just kind of do it, but what does that actually mean? Well, for some people, it is to get into kind of a meditative state of connection. For some people, it's actually visualizing a connection. If you're a very visual person, it's great to, you might even see a little, you know, a link or a ribbon between hearts or between your minds. Again, this isn't anything necessarily magical or mystical. It's just a way of bringing that energy in, of however it feels to you to connect and what that means with your animal. You would do that. And if you're beginning for the first time, you might want to start with something really basic, just saying, I think it's always really good to be honest in relationships and honest and as authentic as you can when you begin. So just say however you feel. You know, I'm really nervous about this, or I think this is a little crazy, but I'm going to try it anyway. Or, you know, I'd like to know why, and then insert specific problem here. Why you always bark, why you are afraid of, you know, this other animal, why when we walk you always want to go this way. You know, ask a question that has some importance to you. And then the hard part for most humans is to be quiet and to listen. And that really does mean on an interior level, letting go of all those doubts you have of this is going to work or it's not going to work, or, oh, well, I think he'll say this, or she should be saying this. It's really letting go of all that and just letting there be a very empty, quiet, peaceful space for you to receive an answer. Because if there's not that empty space, how are you going to get an answer? So you really have to kind of cultivate that space, that sense within yourself, so that an answer can arrive. And then next step is allowing that answer to arrive. And as we mentioned before, it can come in many different ways. Some people will actually hear thoughts, hear words. Some people get an image. I remember one woman told me she got snippets of songs. She would hear different like messages through little lines of songs that would come to her, and they would be very appropriate for what she was actually thinking of. And I think a second kind of recommendation here is to not judge what you get, you know, because it's very easy if you're not used to this to jump into, well, did I really get that, or did I just project that, or was I thinking about that? Let's just let that go, or allow yourself to let that go, and just see what comes and without judging it. Some people are comfortable writing that down. Some people don't want to write it down. It really, whatever works for you. If you do get a communication right away and feel motivated to ask another question, you know, by all means, do that. If not, my advice is to just thank the animal for the time you got together, because that's something that you can build on. And communication really, for most people, I think, starts out, you know, a little bit on the slower side, and a little bit, it's like we're tuning in a radio, you know, maybe it's a little staticky at first. It might feel a little distant or a little, you know, soft. And the more you do it, it is something you build on, and the more you learn about yourself, about how you receive, what works for you to send messages, you start to hear the different tones that different animals have. You start to discriminate between, is this an individual personality level talking, or is this more of a, you know, a group of animals coming through? And it just opens up this whole different world of, you know, things that you'll find out for yourself. You know, by all means, you can read about it, you can take workshops in this, or you can just, you know, experience it for yourself. I used to have a dog.
One of the toughest times in a person's life is when they have a pet that is reaching the end of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like we have a dog on the hospice right now that's dying.
Mm-hmm.
He lived already far longer than the vet's thought he would, but right now he's looking pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
He's a walking skeleton, and he's having trouble with fluid in his abdomen, and, you know, and we know it's getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And with him, it seems like he doesn't want to give up, because this is the best he's ever had it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a rescue dog. He's just on hospice. Once they land with us, they're not ever going to be put down until, you know, it's just it's that point.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as he's happy and he wants to live, you know, it is. It seems like he just wants to, because he gets to eat good stuff, and it's warm, and you know, he knows the routine, and everybody's nice to him, and nobody throws rocks at him, and so forth and so on. But, you know, not all dogs feel that way, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how would you know when your companion is at the point where, you know, they really want to go?
Well, once again, I think it's cultivating that space of honesty between you and your animal, and just asking, you know. And I think, you know, I've heard some people say they can't do it because they get too emotional. And if that's the case, then ask a professional communicator to do it for you. But I think most animals will tell you very clearly whether they need help or not, or if they're ready or not. You know, my old pal right now, Zach, he is, you know, he's getting ready to leave, but he loves his food. He's getting salmon and moose, and he's just like, man, this is good. You know, he's just not ready to go yet, and he's not at that point where he's ready to. And, you know, I've certainly made my peace with it. If he's ready, when he's ready to go, I'm, you know, there to do whatever needs to be done. So I think some animals, you know, actually are ready to go, and they're holding on because their person isn't ready. And so, you know, that's kind of a tricky area. So you also need to ask yourself, am I okay with this? And, you know, am I okay with my animal leaving? Is there anything else I need to say? Sometimes sitting with your animal and speaking your truth, speaking from your heart, will do wonders in, you know, allowing yourself to heal and allowing your animal to, you know, leave when he or she is ready to leave.
Yeah. You know, and a year ago I got a letter from the dog food company telling me it was time to put Red on pink food, and I was like, well, wait a minute, mm-hmm. I'm not ready for her to be old yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, granted, she's not slowing down yet, but her muzzle's got white on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not
mm-hmm.
the coal black it used to be, and her face is black. The rest of her is red, which is where her name came from. But
mm-hmm.
You know, she's got white on her chin and white on the sides now, and it's like, when did this happen? You know, I'm not ready for you to be old yet. You know,
right.
Yeah, we've got a lot more things to do together.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is. It's. And I've watched friends recently. Three dogs, you know, individual dogs, and they were, you know, like the younger one was 12, but you know, the other two were 16 and 17 years old. They'd been around a long time.
Uh huh.
And but the people still had a hard time when it was that time.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Well, and it is, and I think it's a huge learning time too. You know, I think probably. It's a big one because it brings up our own shadow issues about death and about, you know, this is a whole big thing, and many people are very uncomfortable with that. But I think being with an animal who is going through the dying process really can help us a great deal with our own death of loved ones. There was a cat I spoke with once, a cat named Queen, and her person was, you know, upset about it, but really wanted to kind of connect with her and sit with her. And that's what Queen said. And Queen was saying that the way she described it is that she wasn't ready to die quite yet, but what she was doing is she was taking long naps and she was feeling into her death, which I thought was a really cool way of saying it. And what she was doing was kind of dreaming into death, and she would go so far and kind of feel these experiences and then bring them back into her body and go out further and further. I was really amazed and fascinated by that. And then when my dog Barney was ready to go, he did a very similar thing and talked about it in much the same way, a sense of what he called a more conscious form of dying than humans are used to, where you're actually kind of bridging that gap between this world and the other world, although a lot of animals will tell you they're not really different worlds. It's not really as separated as we think it is. And so you're kind of bridging that and becoming more conscious of your other selves, let's call them, and then bringing that back into the body and grounding it and going back and forth. So it was really fascinating, and it really diffused, I think, a lot of fear for me about what death and dying involves and is about.
Oh, the more we talk to it, it seems like the more animals have to teach us.
I think there's definitely a lot that can be learned, you know. And I also want to say this, because I had a talk with a dolphin one time, and, you know, I was kind of in that mode of saying that, you know, we have so much to learn from animals. And the dolphin said to me, we have a lot to learn from humans, too. And the way that was meant was that humans have a lot of knowledge, a lot of gifts that we have, in a way, yet to bring to the planet. And what I mean by that is buried, that kind of buried deeply, how to say it, you get to a space within yourself where you're the authentic you, and we all shine in certain ways, and those are the gifts that we bring to the planet. And I think when you connect with animals, especially an animal who's very cognizant of their gift, and you connect in that way, there is an interchange that goes on. We're not just always the students. Sometimes we're the teachers as well. And that's when it gets really fascinating, you know? That's when we're all shining the fullness of who we all really are.
You know, sometimes I think we tend to put our humanity onto the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't us.
Right.
You know, they are humans. But, you know, they've chosen for various reasons to, share lives with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
right.
When we're communicating with our animals, how can we be sure to not, you know, just really put our humanity, you know, into them, you know? Do dogs and cats and other animals really sit around contemplating the meaning of life?
Right. Well, it's a really, really good question. I think there's two levels of answer to it. And number one is when you start out communicating with animals in this way, you really do need to check your own self as to what level you're coming from. Like I said, you know, some people have very strict views about, you know, whatever, vegetarianism, or, you know, we shouldn't do this. I remember speaking with one lady who, you know, her whole thing was smoking, that people shouldn't smoke. And every communication she had with her animals, you know, or other animals, were always about the dangers of smoking. Well, you know, maybe some animals are sensitive to smoke, but every single animal, you know, so that's a projection, and we have to be really careful about to not over-project our you know, likes and dislikes and our, you know, beliefs onto animals. So that's number one, is being very clear within yourself when you're having this connection or communication with an animal. Number two, then, is... Oh, I forgot number two. What was it?
I can't help you out other than, you know,
I remembered it. All right, we have to be careful not to project, but we also have to remember that we are humans, and the way we interpret the world is in a human way. So the way I think of it is we're translating. You know, like I said before, when you connect with a whale and a whale's explaining to you what echolocation is like, or when you're connecting with a worm and it's explaining to you how it moves to the earth with your body, you have to translate that kind of into human terms and understand it. And we have to express to people, you know, when we're writing books or even talking in this way, that, look, it's a translation. You know, I remember a 12-year-old asked me, you know, do all these animals really speak English? I'm like, okay, you know, no, they don't really speak English. I speak English, so it's coming through me in English. You know, I'm translating. I'm taking these thoughts and these feelings, and I'm translating them through my own brain, and I'm expressing them in a way that other humans can understand. So we do need to keep that in mind, too, is that, you know, there's kind of a danger of projection of our own thoughts and ideas, but there's also the value of projection, which is, you know, language translation, which is a kind of projection, in that we're using a certain framework to share this experience with other humans. So, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it is, because it's a difficult thing to think about. You know, are we over-interpreting it? Are we, you know... Do animals really sit around contemplating the meaning of life, even their life?
Right, and not all of them do, you know, and yet at the same time, I've connected with some animals who really do that, and they really, you know, you're able to talk to them in a very almost intellectual way and get some very profound ideas, whereas other animals are very, very, very simple. So my experience is that it's both ways. That just is with connecting with humans. You know, you connect with some very simple humans and some who are great thinkers. And I think we see that same range, or I have experienced that same range in animals, some being very simple and you know, they're happy to just be who they are, and others who actually contemplate things and who can give you vast amounts of information. And it may not be through their personality. It may be that their connection with, their animal group is coming through. So in other words, sometimes you will get information that is kind of spirit of cat or spirit of horse coming through an individual horse or cat. So there's also that information that comes through.
That's interesting.
You know, I think it's as open as we are. Like I said before, I think the kind of communications we get are as open as we're willing to be. And in terms of your answer to, you know, how do we know if we're projecting or not, I think at a certain point you feel it. You feel whether you're being very honest and authentic within yourself or if you're kind of, you know, manipulating the conversation or making it something other than it seems. You know, you just have to tune in.
You know, tomorrow I'm going to have to try some of this stuff myself.
Good.
It's a communication in a different way than you know, I normally do in you know, my day-to-day interaction
mm-hmm.
with my little zoo crew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they, you know, really had to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why do they do some of the things they do, or why are they worried about some of the things that they seem to be worried about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have one dog that absolutely is normally underneath the furniture and will not come out during a thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another one that anytime there's fireworks, she's got to get outside right now so she can see it.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, just a heads up on that is I think intention is everything. And I think if you go into that, those questions with a genuine sense of wanting to know, it's going to be much easier for you to connect with that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And folks, I'm going to announce a winner here. We had a winner for the deck of Animal Oracle cards, and that'll be Dar Snyder. So congratulations, Dar. I hope you enjoy them. I had a lot of fun with them. For those of you who aren't sure what I'm talking about, if you look at my website, Angelica Del Mar appeared in December on the Dawn of Shades and talks about the cards then. So you can see, so if you look on the website, you can see a little bit about the deck of cards I gave away tonight. So going back to where we were, we're winding up. We're down the last few minutes of the program. So I'm trying to think of what would be some excellent thoughts to end the program with. You got any ideas yourself?
Some excellent thoughts.
Excellent thoughts. Yeah,
excellent thoughts. I think an excellent thing would be for everybody to try it, you know, and just see.
Well, it sounds like just plain fun. I mean, relaxing in a meditative sort of way.
Yes.
And you know, spending you know, quality time with your companion animal, whatever it is, whether it's a bunny rabbit, a goldfish, a dog, a cat, a horse, a cow, a pig. A lot of people have pet pigs these
mm-hmm.
days. Whatever your guinea pig, whatever it is. You know, then to understand maybe, you know, where they're coming from. You know,
right, and I think you feed into the right word. It's make it fun. Have fun with it. Go in lightly. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, to-do. It can be very simple. And follow your, you know, what do you most want to know? Follow your passion. Follow your question. And just open. And I think most animals respond to that. You know how animals naturally respond to children who are playful. And so maybe it's a sense also bringing out your child within and being very open, you know, to what comes.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, a lot of times, you know, you look at something and you weigh its pros and cons. I don't see any cons with attempting to communicate with your animal.
No, I don't think
so. And there's so many potential pros to it.
Right.
Even if you're unsuccessful, a little meditation time never did anybody any harm.
Right. The worst you're going to have is just to be with your animal. So, yeah, you're right. Exactly.
Right now I have one who's going to get her 2 cents worth in on the show. She's to yodel and whatnot over here. She's looking at me.
Oh, I'd like to hear a yodel.
Oh, well, she may do that here in a minute. Yeah, she's been known to voice her opinions now and again. Yeah.
Good.
And you never know when she's going to speak up. Never know. And that, you know, that's the thing is, you know, is to sit down and, yeah, and maybe I'm cold-blooded, but a lot of times the various choices I make, I do. I actually sit down and write a list of this is the pros, this is the cons,
mm-hmm.
or the pluses or the negatives, however, whatever term you want to use. And, you know, if this sounds like something that's
fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's relaxing because you are, you know, the whole point of being quiet in yourself is to be quiet in yourself. And when you're
right.
doing that, you know, it helps your entire physical and psychological self relax.
Right, exactly.
You know, and get in that here and now and quit concentrating on, you know, everything from your woes about health insurance to the rising cost of homeowners insurance or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance seems to be the big topic of the day here lately. But, you know, whatever issue you have on your mind, you let it go.
Right.
And you get in that here and now, and I, like I said, I have to sit down tomorrow and try that with at least one of them.
Okay.
And I have a number of choices here to make about who I talk to and see if I can do it too, you know, and because this doesn't seem like it. You have to be anybody special in order to do it. And there she just spoke up. I knew it was coming. I was looking at it.
Well, see, and that was a good point. You know, you're right. I think it's not that we have to be something special or anyone special. It's really our birthright. And I remember you talked in the beginning of the show about that sense of remembering. And I think that's a lot of what this is we're remembering something that came very natural to us, you know, many generations ago, of connecting with the world in a very one-on-one way. And
in our own childhood.
Exactly.
All of the
garbage
of the world settled upon our shoulders, mm-hmm. and we were just, you know, you danced because it was fun to dance, not because there was even any music.
That's right. That's totally true. Yeah.
You know, and the same thing, you know, when you went and were with your dog, you were literally just with your dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You weren't worried about anything else. It was that, right. that childlike part of us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There you go. You got it.
you know, and like my daughter still, she will often call me and say, okay, Mom, what's wrong? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Uh-huh.
I talked to Red. Red's worried about you. There's something
uh-huh.
going on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I've had insomnia all week, or I've got a cold, or, you know, I've been working really late a lot, and whatever the issue is. And she's like, well, you know, Red's worrying about you. And it kind of makes me reevaluate what's going on. You know, I don't know. You know, I can't say A or nay on whether or not Red's worried about me. It's just kind of strange to get, you know, a call from your daughter half a continent away, and that's what she tells you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you take it at face value, there is always something going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether the dog is doing it, whether she's communicating with the dog or she's psychic, I don't know. But, you know, I know that, you know, legitimately something would be going on that had been affecting me and probably my interaction with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so to remember that sort of thing, you know,
well,
yeah, I think your pets notice things about you, just like
yeah.
we notice things about our
right.
pets.
And why is that? Because we're all connected. You know, I think when you get there deep down far enough, you realize we're all connected. Everything, all humans, all animals, all plants, we're all connected. And so that really is in a way how telepathy works, is that we are just tuning in on one of those connections and hearing it in a way. You know, feeling it in a way where we're able to translate that or make sense of what that means. But yeah.
Well, I know so far it has been a really, really fun show, and we are getting down to the wire.
Okay.
Now that we're getting close, I want you to tell everybody once again about your website and your books so that they know where to find you.
Sure. The website is www.animalvoices.net, and there's two books listed there, Animal Voices and Awakening to Animal Voices. And I just finished a third book, which is going to be called Shapeshifting with Your Animal Companions, which is all about death and dying and shapeshifting, and that will be available in August of this year. So,
in August, huh?
I didn't even know you had a new book coming out. Yep. We just going to printing very soon, actually. We just finished with the editing process, so, yeah.
That must be a relief when it's off your desk and off on someone else's.
It's always nice. You know, I had a really wonderful editor this time, a copy editor, and we just finished it up about 2 weeks ago, and yeah, it is nice. Now I get to just breathe a little bit till August, till it's out there.
Uh-huh. And you must be excited, though, about it coming out, too. I mean, the third book, that's a great accomplishment.
I am. It was a really fun project to do. And this one, you know, the first one, it was really a lot of animal communicators spoke in the book. There was about 2 dozen of them and a lot of different animals.
Uh-huh.
And the second one also was a number of group voices. This one is really a little bit different in that it's really almost purely my experiences with my dog, Barney, and with animals. So it's more of a, I would say in some ways it's more of a spiritual evolution type book about our dreams, about the death experience, and about shape-shifting with different animals and what that means for the planet. And shape-shifting into death as well, which many animals will tell you is a type of shape-shift of consciousness.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I'm looking forward to the book coming out.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Well, folks, we are down to the wire on this. I wanted to make sure everybody knew that next week we're going to have Sarvananda Bluestone on. We're going to try to talk about signs and omens in everyday life, as well as dreams. And it should be a fascinating program. He's written a couple of books on the topic, and it should be a good time. And we have a number of fun things coming up for those pet fans that are listening in tonight. In April, we'll be doing another series on pets, so we'll have repeated shows. So keep checking in on the website at www.gscott.com for the upcoming guests. And you can decide which shows are going to be the best ones to watch. And you also never know when I'll be giving away something on the program, from an autographed book to deck of oracle cards or whatever else suits my fancy. So do you have any last comments there, Dawn, before we go?
Oh, well, I just hope everybody has had a, you know, interesting time, and you're definitely welcome to visit the site, read excerpts from the book, and I also hope everybody you know, gives it a try, connecting with their animal.
Definitely. I know I'm going to be sitting, you know, with my one or more of my crew tomorrow and finding out exactly what's on their mind. Maybe I'll get some insights into why Sissy has had such a great change in personality over the last year.
Hmm. Well, it'd be cool if you write about it at your site.
Pardon?
It would be cool if you write about it at your site.
I'll have to put something up there about my attempts and how successful I am and whatnot, because that would be interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I never even thought about doing that before. So, folks, tune in again next week for Sarvananda Bluestone and Signs and Omens in Your Everyday Life. And outside of that, I hope that tonight's program helped you find a little bit of illumination on your path to your personal truth. Outside of that, have a great week. Good night. And I'm your host, Gia Scott. Good night.